Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:41 British Summer Time. Today is May 17th. Today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And we remain within this rather exceptional period for equity markets where the S&P continues to extend its advance to new all-time highs and is up by 2/3% in here today. And this is important because the market's been ranging for the better part of 13 years, and these are new all-time highs. And in terms of just basic technical analysis, when you see something that is breaking out of a very lengthy range, then it makes you sit up and pay attention, and one has to then go back and analyze exactly why this might be occurring. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But if we have a review of what's been happening this week, then it has been fairly eventful. US Treasury yields are rallying from they've been pulling back for the last 2 months, and they found support last week. And they're back up now to 1.9%, and 2% is a bit of a psychological level. And if we start to see them getting much above that, then people will start to think about base formation completion in US Treasuries as well. And gold, having got pulled back so very sharply last month, it got down to a low of 1,321, then got almost all the way back up to 1,500. And at the low today was at back at $1,359. And that low at 1,321 is the first area of potential support. And if anything that resembles a bullish argument is to be justified, then it will need to continue to hold above that level. But it remains weak. And in the absence of a clear upward dynamic, then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. And in the equity markets, the Indian market has been on a tear recently, and the Nifty index is brushing against its all-time highs, and it hit peaks in 2008 and hit another peak in 2011, and it spent the time since 2011 in this rounding characteristic formation, which is generally a sign of accumulation. And while there is a short-term overbought condition, the medium-term outlook does look really quite bullish. And with inflationary pressures starting to decrease in India, then the potential for it to be able to move to new all-time highs is increasing in here. And in China, we had this really very impressive rally in the early part of the year, from December through till about February. And then we saw that short-term overbought condition being unwound, and the market pulled back and closed its overextension relative to the 200-day moving average really quite swiftly. But it has been finding support over the last month, and it's strung together two upward dynamics today and yesterday, suggesting that demand is beginning to return in here. Now, about 10 days ago, or it was definitely before the chart seminar, I did some analysis of shares that were yielding more than their PEs, and a number of the Chinese banks were in that category. And those listed in Hong Kong, Bank of China is an example. I think the yield is 5.8% and the estimated PE is 5.6. So we can't really consider that these shares are expensive in here. And in fact, a great deal of extraordinarily bearish news has been already priced into these shares. So on the possibility that things are not nearly as bad as people are making them out to be, then the potential for a re-rating in China is really quite compelling, not least because these valuations are so low. And when we look at the rest of Asia, or the ASEAN region, then the Indonesian market was quite firm in here, and the Thai market has firmed. The Singapore market this week didn't do much, but has held on to the majority of its gains. And following the positive election result last week in Malaysia, then that market continues to hold its breakout. And Japan continues to extend its advance, and it's back up to 15,000, which is a potential area of psychological resistance, but there's no evidence yet that it is finding or encountering resistance at that level. And Japan, on a currency-adjusted basis, not just in local currencies, is the best-performing stock market index this year. The Nikkei is up 22.25%, and the S&P is up 16.48%. Europe has had a much more difficult time, and that has really has been where the focus of risk has been. And the DAX, which is probably one of the better performing Eurozone countries, is up about 7% this year. That is so far. And the commodity complex more generally has been really very soft indeed, and the industrial metals, having had a good bounce about 2 weeks ago, have given up the vast majority of that bounce are right back on their lows. And in the soft commodity sector, soybeans has firmed in here, but it is doing so very much on its own, and the coffee contracts and sugar contracts are really quite weak. And lumber, which had got right up to test the $4 area a couple of months ago, has really given up quite a lot of that advance. And when we look at commodities more generally, then a pattern of weakness is really quite evident, and not least in the precious metals. And oil is really a standout and an anomaly in that regard, because oil is back up to $96 in WTI and about $104 on Brent crude. And it has a constructive chart pattern, which suggests that we might see additional strength in oil contracts. And that would suggest that there's a little bit of tightness in the market at present, and that people are beginning to price in a little bit better economic news. When we look at the medium to long term, the supply tightness that we have really become used to in the last decade, and perhaps more than that even, is likely to dissipate with new sources of supply coming online, and with the reasons for substituting natural gas for oil becoming ever more compelling. So the tight situation that we've had to deal with in oil is not likely to persist into the medium to long term, but it does remain a challenge in the short term. Now, if we look at the long term, and veteran subscribers will be familiar with our view that there are, if we look at where productivity is likely to come from, and if we think about where the themes are and what themes can generate outsized gains from the financial markets over the next number of decades, then there has to be some fundamental reason that is not just compelling, but is capable of inspiring people. And if we look at what the sound fundamentals might be, then we can break it down into the types of things that are likely to really enhance productivity. So probably the most common multiple for productivity is labor, technology, energy, and debt. So the first three, labor, we have the greatest urbanization in history, and the global population is expanding. So even though the birth rate is actually declining, the infant mortality rate is improving, and that is creating the conditions where the global population remains on an upward trajectory, and not least because more people are living longer. So we're getting a fattening of the demographic shift on both ends of the curve. And that's likely to persist for at least another 20 years, and then it will probably peak out. So in the next 20 years, we're going to have literally more people on Earth than we've ever had before. And by simple weight of numbers alone, that means that there's going to be more capacity for labor. And because we have capitalist economic systems being employed in an increasing number of countries, it means that the productive capacity of more people will likely be utilized, and that will help people to lift themselves out of poverty and into some form of middle class or into the consuming classes. And the likelihood is that over a billion people are going to be lifted out of poverty and into the middle classes in the next decade to 15 to 20 years. And that represents, by virtue of size alone, a significant investment theme all by itself. But we're also living in a golden age of technological development. And with the pace of technological development and the pace of industrial automation and industrializing the internet and material science and nanotechnology and social media, consumer electronics, and the various types of technological innovations that haven't really become apparent yet. But every massive technological leap that humankind has had has correlated very highly with an enhancement in the way we communicate. And the internet and social media and the cloud represent another giant leap in terms of how we can communicate. And the pace of patents that are being created continues to accelerate. And it means that with the technological development that is coming through and the commercialization of these ideas, that the capacity for additional productivity gains is enhanced once more. And when we look at energy, well, the oldest adage in the commodity markets is that the cure for high prices is high prices. And we've had high energy prices now for approximately 10 years. And that has encouraged additional supply. And it has encouraged substitution. And that substitution has primarily come in the form of natural gas, which is looking to be increasingly abundant. And we're also looking at efficiency gains, and that creates a backward loop into the technology sector. And when you conflate these three major themes, then we have the conditions for the next secular bull market in equities. But what about the fourth one? And because Wall Street has been largely range-bound for the last 13 years, and we've been through two major crashes on Wall Street in that time, then we can look at the velocity of money. And the velocity of money in the US has been trending lower since 1997. And that can be looked on as evidence that the economy has been debt-fueled and has relied on the creation of credit to fuel economic growth rather than the productivity gains that we would associate with a secular bull market. And that has translated into a generational-long process of P/E ratio contraction and rising dividend yields right across a number of equity markets. And that debt that has been accumulated represents a challenge. And in the meantime, what we've had is that the absolute level of debt hasn't really changed very much in the last 5 years, but the people holding that debt has changed a great deal. So consumers have been deleveraging, and corporations have been enhancing their balance sheets and actually have been increasing their debt loads because they're getting the best cost of capital that they've been presented with in generations. So they're even buying back their equities. And in fact, the way that the equity market is developing is that the shares of the kinds of companies that represent quality are turning into collector's items because some of these companies are buying back their own shares at a prodigious rate. And they're doing it with money that they've borrowed at very, very low rates. So even though the supply of bonds has actually been extraordinarily high, what has really happened is that governments have socialized private sector debts, and it is where governments have intervened where the real debt problem is. And this is something that we've never really seen before. And when we look at what they're actually intending to do, in some cases, they are continuing to engage in quantitative easing. And that's certainly the case in the USA and Japan more recently, and the Swiss with their peg to the euro printing Swiss francs with abandon. And the Australian dollar is down now to 97 cents, and that represents the lower side of a two-year range. And Australia is a AAA-rated sovereign, but with commodity prices pulling back and the domestic economy under severe pressure because of the strength of the currency, and when they look at the weakness of other currencies relative to the Australian dollar, then the question as to not really whether it's a choice as to how much Aussie dollars they're going to print, but how many they have to print in order to curtail the advance of the currency, is putting competitive pressure on the Australian economy. And it is really encouraging the RBA to increase the supply of Australian dollars. And if we go right back to behavioral technical analysis, and we look at how we would view this type of chart at the chart seminar, then a loss of momentum and lengthy congestion area trading ranges are seldom reliable continuation patterns. So there is the possibility that the Australian dollar represents a type 3 top. And to really countermand that perspective, it would need to rally pretty soon and really quite emphatically to get back up towards the middle of its current range. So we are at a very delicate point for a number of currencies. But when we go back to that debt issue, the Fed, and there's been a huge amount of speculation as to when quantitative easing, or the conditions of quantitative easing, are about to be changed. And at some point, the three bullish themes are going to coalesce into the conditions for a new secular bull market. And at that point, the velocity of money should turn. And that's, velocity of money is probably going to be a lagging indicator. But when it turns, it will put pressure on the Fed to begin to remove that liquidity. Now, what we can anticipate first is that they will tail off the amount of additional liquidity that they're adding in. And then they may stop adding in. Or they may keep it steady, and that they will reinvest their dividends, or they'll reinvest their coupons from their treasury and mortgage holdings. But at some point, they will start to remove that quantitative easing, and that could potentially start to happen in the next 2 years. And when they do that, then any strategy that has been relying on cheap leverage or cheap liquidity and leverage is going to run into trouble. And that is going to have an effect on stock markets and on most particularly on bond markets. And that is likely to also coincide with some additional valuation contraction. And when we look at how the last major valuation contraction ended on Wall Street, the Dow Jones had been ranging for the better part of 15 years below 1,000. And it broke upwards in 1980 and spent 2 years ranging. And valuations bottomed in 1982 and early 1983. And that coincided with a retest of the 1,000 area. And that was, in technical terms, where a previous area of resistance turned into future support. And that was the probably the most attractive time to engage and to engage with stock markets on a buy and hold type basis. And when we look at how things are developing right now, there's a strong likelihood that that is what we're going to have. Now, when we look at US Treasuries, and I think it is worth looking at the US Treasury chart over at least 5 years and probably more like 10 years, and it looks like it has base formation characteristics. And when we look at it and compare it to what the yen has been doing, and if you look at dollar yen, and that's inverted, so you look at the dollar declining versus the yen over the last number of years, it was a volatile trend. And at times, it had these very large declines, and then it rallied right back up. And there was, give or take, a progression of lower rally highs. And it encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. and the yen started to lose upward momentum, the dollar downward momentum, about a year ago, and it broke out of its base, and the rest is history. And we've had this remarkable move, and today the yen has gone from, I think, a low of 75 for the dollar up to a high today of 103.21. So this has been a remarkable move. And it wasn't something that many people really wanted to countenance before it actually occurred. And now people are rushing to get in, and they're trying to anticipate where, to what degree the yen will weaken and the dollar strengthen as we move forward. Now, we're at a very similar story with US Treasuries. It was an equally inconsistent decline in yields, and it's become increasingly volatile. And when you look at it on a log scale chart, then yields halved twice in the last 3 years. They went from 4 to 2%, and from about 3.75 to 1.5, twice. And that represents extraordinary volatility, and not least acceleration, following what has been a secular decline in yields. And now it looks like it's forming a base. It has base formation characteristics, and we're back in the region of the 200-day moving average. And that progression of lower rally highs is down to about 2%. So if we start to see a dynamic move back above 2%, then that's going to represent a really quite compelling technical evidence that something has really changed. And if we start to see yields back above 3%, then that is going to break the progression of lower rally highs. And considering that this has been the market on a total return basis, which has been the most rewarding and the most consistent on a total return basis, then that would represent a major change. And it would be the first time that people have really begun to lose money on a total return basis in bonds. And it's at that point that people will start looking for yield, and equities could start to become very, very attractive indeed. And when we look at other markets, then China, with such low valuations, is looking really quite attractive. And India has been a wallflower for 5 years, and that's also looking attractive. And when we look at the rest of the ASEAN region, then this is where we have a large proportion of the new global middle class. And there's been a great deal of interest in Africa of late, because that's where the majority of the new population is likely to come from in the next 20 years. And that is also where governance is beginning to improve, and where a nascent consumer class is evident. And that's also likely to be an interesting investment destination over the long term. Gold did particularly well in the last decade, and perhaps the most consistent trend of all had been the increasing holdings of ETFs in gold, and they represented the marginal buyers. And ETF holdings had increased regardless of what gold had done. And even though gold was capable of accelerations both upwards and downwards, ETF holdings had continued to increase until December, and they pulled back. And they broke back below the 200-day moving average for the first time in its 10-year history in March. And it hasn't looked back. And we haven't had a rally take place in the ETF holdings of gold at all. And the ETF holdings of gold have fallen 17% in the last 4 months. And this represents a massive liquidation on the institutional side. So even though we hear stories of retail buyers queuing around the corner in places like China and India, it doesn't mean a great deal when you have the 4,500 tons being taken down by 17% in terms of the institutional holdings of the metal. And until the ETF holdings start to tick back up, then the likelihood is that gold prices are going to remain under pressure. And when we look at the consistency of goals trend, then the decline from 1550 down to 1321 represents a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And it has got people to really start to think about why they're holding and how much they're going to hold and whether they're going to increase their positions. There's a lot of questioning going on right now. And in order for confidence to be rebuilt, then some significant bullish action is going to be required. And at the moment, there isn't a great deal of evidence. So we have to consider the fact that gold's bull market is over, or that at least it is over for the medium term. And that is also something that has probably sent shockwaves through a significant portion of the investment community. In the currency markets, the yen remains by far the most important story. And I think people are looking at the yen and saying, just how weak can it get? And if we look at the chart pattern, then the move that we've had so far has been really quite incredible. And we are in this deeply politically motivated, deeply oversold level for the yen at present. But it's unlikely to get back below the dollar yen rate is unlikely to get back below the 200-day moving average. And considering the massive yen bull market that we've had, then there is room for an additional significant decline. And people are looking at the yen and saying, how far can it go? And they're questioning the resolve of the Japanese in how much quantitative easing they're likely to have. And those are realistic and they're reasonable questions, not least because the Japanese have disappointed so many investors so often over the last 20 years. But this does look like it's different, and we do have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But what we also have to bear in mind is that the deflationary process that has been there for the last 20 years, and the fact that it has been so damaging to consumer confidence, means that expectations, particularly within Japan, of just how much the economy can change are likely to undershoot. And it means that the possibility is that we're going to see that stock markets will outperform expectations as the new bullish environment evolves. And that represents a rather interesting opportunity. So even though we have this overbought condition, and even though there is the risk that we're going to see some form of consolidation at some point, it's likely to offer another entry point when it does occur. And with the yen weakening and rather significant questions being asked about Europe, and something that has sort of been at the back of my mind for the last couple of weeks, is that when people compare Europe and the USA, and people, particularly in Europe, have this opinion that the USA is a young country, but the US's institutions have been around for approximately 100 years. The FDIC has been around for approximately 100 years. Whereas Europe is made up of some very old countries and some really very ancient civilizations, but the European project and Europe as a country in itself is actually only 15 years. So what they're really engaged in is nation building. And we are getting to a point where people are going to have to decide whether they want to be in or out. And that is a very, very big question. And it is unlikely that that question is going to be put to various populations, because politicians probably won't like the answer. But if there is a big difference between policy and politics. And the policy for the vast majority of European countries is to head towards a federal Europe. And that does mean that there will be some form of mutualization of debt in future, and that there will be a system to run down failed banks, and that depositors will have to bear the brunt of failed banks in future. The Cyprus template is very much template, and it is likely to be employed in other countries in future. But it does look like that any country that does not want to become part of the United States of Europe or a federal Europe will be heading for the exit. And that is likely to also create uncertainty. So if we look at the major currencies, then Japan has got this policy of weakening, and the euro is not going to be in a position to be a very firm currency for the foreseeable future, then the US dollar turns up as stronger by default. And when we look at the dollar index, it's been largely range-bound for the last 5 years, and that's following really quite a strong or a very stiff decline. And it's if we see the three major bullish factors and themes starting to coalesce around a secular bull market in the latter half of this decade, which could last for upwards of 10 to 15, even 20 years, then that should be dollar bullish. And the base formation on the dollar index could well be completed, and we could see that the dollar returns once more to a position of preeminence. So we are living in extraordinarily interesting environment. And in the short term, we're presented with short-term overbought conditions in some of these equity markets. And when we look at something like the S&P, which has had reactions of between 40 and 60 points on three different occasions since November, then a reaction of greater than 60 points would really be required for people to question the consistency of the advance. And I'm looking at the clock and I realize I've been going on for rather a long time. So I'm going to leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.